Today's episode of the City Smack Podcast is brought to you by The Price of a Mile with Woody Kincaid. Let me tell you a little bit about this podcast because it's actually one of my favorites, and it just so happens to be another one that's within the City Smack network. So this one's hosted by Bowerman Track Club rookie, former Portland pilot, first-year professional, Woody Kincaid, as he tries to get to know some of his training partners. Just so happens that he's on the Bowerman Track Club, which is one of the best U.S. distance running clubs in the country. So every month, he gets one of his training partners, sits him down, and it's incredible to hear how he gets them to open up about how they got into running, how they found success, how they've been able to manage success, the ups and downs of their careers. So he's had Evan Jaeger on, he's had Shelby Houlihan on. Check it out yourself. Subscribe on iTunes. It's on SoundCloud. Latest episode went up last week with Chris Derrick, and it's a really good listen. The Price of a Mile with Woody Kincaid. Check it out.
My guest for today's show is two-time national champion, former Colorado Buffalo, and current City of Smack contributor, Amar Musa. Let's start the show.
Welcome to another episode of the City of Smack podcast. As I've mentioned before, every week I'll do an interview with some sort of athlete or coach. But in addition to that, I'll bring in someone interesting within the running world. So this episode, I'm joined by fellow City of Smack contributor, former Colorado Buffalo, two-time national champion, Amar Musa. Amar, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. Thanks for having me on Cities and on the podcast.
Yeah, so we're taping this in early August, August 4th, in Raleigh, North Carolina, before the Sir Walter Myler meet, just kind of hanging out before the races start. So for you, this is different, right, for sure, being at a meet and actually just spectating.
I haven't done much of this. I did it once when I went to watch NCAA Outdoors a few years ago to motivate myself to make NCAA Outdoors. It didn't work, but I'm out here as a spectator getting to hang out with good people, run a Gene Mile, try to break 7 minutes, you know, having a good time.
So you mentioned running, you personally. How much of it do you still do?
Obviously, this is not a video, so you can't tell how much weight I've gained, but not much. I ran the Cherry Blossom race in D.C. a few months ago, and then after that, it's been a lot of eating and not running. So that's where I'm at.
Do you think it seems to be fairly common for a lot of college runners when they go so hard for 4 or 5 years afterwards, it's just like, my body just needs a break entirely. What was, I guess, your decision-making process like to put, not necessarily an end to running, but just an end to training and getting into a daily routine of, you know, I got to get out in the morning and I got to, you know, do something else in the evening. When did you realize you wanted to make that change?
I kind of set, going into my fifth year, after the NCAA title and my most successful year at CU, I was really worried about getting trapped in that cycle of chasing a dream that may or may not be realistic. And, with the nature of American distance running now, it's so competitive that if I did commit to it, commit to running post-collegiately, the entire goal for me would have been to make a U.S. team, whether it be a track or cross country, and realistically, that would have been 3 to 7 years off, just with how good everybody is. And so I kind of told myself if I had three benchmarks, and if I achieved two out of the three of them, I would continue running post-collegially, and I didn't have any of them. So just made myself channel my passion somewhere else, and I've been pretty happy with that now.
Did you notice that, I guess, the type of approach to running and how different you may have thought of it compared to some of your teammates? Because some of those guys who you were on national title winning teams are still running, and they're still, I guess, chasing, you know, those Olympic or, you know, Olympic trial hopes. I mean, did you notice, I guess, within conversations that you would have maybe just in downtime where you saw that they might have been a little bit more into running than you were?
Yeah, I mean, I saw that even within my own household. I roomed with Connor Winter and Pierce Murphy, and both of us, I mean, the whole team was relatively successful, and, you know, Pierce finished top three at NCAAs, and I had a top five finish, and Connor, Pac-12 champion. And so we had a very good running house, and just conversations on our morning runs, you know, Connor and I were both really worried about what we would do after running was done, whenever that would end. And Pierce was incredibly passionate about it, and he did everything he could to get to the level that he's at now. And so just within conversations, you know, there was a clear divide. And so you see, like, Blake, who's not running anymore, who's run 4 minutes three times, and but you got Morgan Pearson, who's a 13:30 guy, and got a deal, and now he's still in Boulder. So it's an interesting division.
So how often, I guess, do you stay in touch with most of those guys on that team?
I'm pretty close with Pierce and Morgan and Blake, those guys that we came up together and won titles together, and so I talk to them. Now that we're adults, it's a lot harder, and we have our own lives going on, but I check in with them once a month at least, and always, whether we're FaceTiming or Snapchatting, Pierce is big on Snapchat, so we're always doing that.
So is it funny, I guess, or just what's it feeling like, I guess, maybe receiving a Snapchat from, say, from one of them, and it's like, I just ran, you know, 15 miles this morning for my long run, and then you're still in bed, and when you open that Snapchat, I mean, what's that vibe like?
Well, I don't know if you know much about Pierce is a surfer, bro, and so the Snapchats I get from him are either him making fun of a surfer, he calls them kooks, and or him surfing. So he never snaps me about running, but I see him on Instagram and watching him, like, go off for a run, I'm like, man, I was training with you a year ago, and now I don't know if I could run a mile with you. And so it's always really funny to see that. But it's, yeah. And then Blake and I, we send Snapchats to each other when we go out for a 1 mile run, and both of us are like drenched sweat and just, we hate this. We don't miss this at all.
When we launched the site, one of the first pieces we had up was a piece that you wrote about, I guess, your relationship with running. From when you wrote that article to where we're at now, has it changed, and how would you characterize it?
I'm still broken up with running, so I've got that going, and there are flashes, there are moments where, like, I come to a meet like this and hanging out with runners, and you miss that sentiment that people just, you know, getting ready for the meet the next day, and you can tell how excited they are and talking about their training and their super dope workout that they did 2 weeks ago, and it's always really, there's like flashes of it. Then running the Cherry Blossom race in April, like, I got the competitive juices flowing again. And that was, you come off the race and you're like, you're just really high on life. And then you get sore and you remember why you don't run. So it's just, there are moments, but I'm still not running nearly to the same level that I was a year ago.
Do you have any sort of personal goals that you have set maybe for yourself in terms of, you know, maybe someday I'll try and run a marathon, or does that idea just still not get you out of, you know, out the door and prefer, you know, a 10-mile run or anything?
I've always had this dream of running the Boston Marathon. That's always been a dream of mine since I was, you know, watching it as a sophomore in high school. And so something special about the Boston Marathon, but I still haven't convinced myself to start running again 70-mile weeks and all that. So maybe I'll kick my ass into gear at some point, but right now it's just a pipe dream.
All right, so let's get into life right now. How you've gone completely from growing up in California, going to Boulder for college, and now on the East Coast, living in D.C., what's going on there?
So I currently am a legislative assistant for Congressman Conyers of Detroit, Michigan. And so I kind of really divorced myself entirely from running and threw myself into the political world. So I worked on the presidential campaign and then went to D.C. and started interning, and then have made my way up into the office that I'm in right now. And I handle a legislative portfolio for my boss and advise him on votes and legislation, and read up on a lot of different topics that are important to my boss, and just have thrown myself into that right now at this point.
It's definitely an interesting time. Not to get too into politics, but what's, I guess, like, the climate like in D.C. when it's like, I guess you have to consume as much news as possible to stay up with things, and every day it seems like there's something new. I guess what's like the lunch chatter like, or what's, you know, the coffee break or the water cooler talk? Is it just, you know, as crazy as, you know, Twitter or the internet makes it seem?
Absolutely. It's honestly, I can feel the years of my life slipping away with just how high strung the place is. And I thought that it was just DC, like this is what happens in DC. And now that I'm in politics, like there's always something new, but talking to old heads who have been around for 20, 30 years, I mean, my boss was around for Watergate. You know, he was on the Judiciary Committee going after Watergate and President Nixon. He's like, this right now is unprecedented, just the madness. And it just every single day there's something new. Even in the same day, there are like three new things. So you're always talking about the newest tweet or the newest charges, the newest article. So it's madness.
Running of the interns, I think, is something that is pretty popular, I guess. Like you see in the news, like maybe once or twice a year. Did you ever do something like that?
I did not. But when I did run the race for my office, when they hired me on, and I was an intern, and they asked me how fast I'd, how do you run? I'm like, yeah, I used to run. Can you run the 10-mile race? I was like, I think I can do that. And I didn't want to tell them that I was an athlete or anything. And so I ran as part of a team for that Cherry Blossom race. And so other than that, I try to be a cool intern, and not like fall into any cheesy cliche traps.
So when someone, I guess nowadays, like say we're here at a meet where there's like elite runners and there's people within the community who I guess are familiar with them, but when you, I guess, are among them and you're introducing yourself to them, I guess, like, how often, I guess it's got to be, like, I think I did it where I was like, yeah, he's a 2-time national champion. For you, I guess, do you still start to separate yourself, I guess, knowing where you're at in running now to what you were in college and stuff like that? Do you, I guess, when you're introducing yourself to someone, want to keep that separate just based where you're at now? Or how do you go about, I guess, identifying yourself?
I mean, obviously running was such a huge part of my identity for 9 years, and that's how I define myself as a student at CU and in high school. Like, I was cool because I was a runner, and I loosely use the term cool, but now that I haven't had the chance to be around these kind of events as much, but I really want to divorce myself from being just a runner, just because I was a runner and I was a 2-time national champion, but right now I'm really happy with my life and happy with what I'm doing. And I want to be, you know, a guy that works in DC that used to run. And now, I mean, there's a new national champion. There are new national champions. There are faster runners than me. And so I don't want to be that guy that's just like living in the old days. And so when I have conversations with people, if it comes up, it's cool, but, like ask me where I run, I'll be like, I ran SCU, and then it'll come up in conversation. But I don't want to be that guy that introduces myself like that.
What's the climate, or not really the climate, but what are your thoughts, I guess, on the state of Colorado? I mean, it just seems like it's an upward progression, even with just better and more, like, pretty impressive recruiting classes year in and year out.
It's interesting. The kids that are there now are different. Different breed, we'll put it like that. The kids, I mean, the guys I came up with, like I mentioned earlier, Connor and Blake and Pierce, we were good because we were always there for each other, and we ran together. And so I don't know much about the culture on the team now, but it was disappointing. I mean, we had the last 5 years, we were always on the podium. The 5 years that I was there, you know, 2 third-place finishes, 2 national championships and a 2nd place, and they did miss the podium last year, but I'm excited to see that there's a lot of young guns who are really good, and they have Joe Klecker and John Dressel, who were both top 10 in the 5K, I believe this year, and Zach Perrin, and I don't think Ben Sorrell has cross eligibility, but it is a young, hungry group, I hope, and I hope they live up to expectations. But I've said this before, and I'll always say this: the 2014 Buffs are the best team of all time.
So that team, I mean, we brought it up in the podcast with Dathan Ritzenhine. You heard his comments, I guess, in response to them. I guess, what's the level of trash talk? Do you think he was right that you guys have just a deeper team than they did? Or I guess, what were your thoughts on his thoughts?
I very much appreciate Dathan recognizing that we were the better team. He's right, though. The guys that they had on that squad, they were 13-20, 13-30 guys. And we did have three in the top 10, and I think we had five All-Americans with one guy 1 second out. So our sixth person being 1 second out from All-American. So we did have depth. Maybe Ritz can correct me on this, but we, like, when we talk about depth, like, we had seven guys at Magnolia Road who would run six flats, and that was something that was always super special for us. But head to head, like in a dual meet, they would crush us. I'll say that. I'll be humble on that front. But we did have some depth.
So, I mean, it's those teams, like the Running with the Buffaloes teams, that I guess inspired future recruiting classes to, you know, give a look to Colorado, and Colorado was a goal for some people. What was it that got you out there?
Mark Wetmore. Just Mark Wetmore and Heather Burrows. When I met them on my visit, the one of the biggest things I would make it a point on my visits to ask coaches what the weakness in the program was. And everybody, other coaches would like dance around it, and you know, and a tip, like as if it was an interview, and they were trying to talk themselves up while also talking about their weakness. And Mark Wetmore was just very like blunt. He's like, our facilities are awful. Like, and he was right. I mean, we had, before this, the new facilities that were put up last year, we had like a 200 meter flat track that, I mean, flat, it had divots and craters, and it, every lap in that in Balch would take a year off of your life. And so he's like, but that's not what we're here for. We're here to win championships, and we've won championships before. And you know, if you come here, you're going to be a tough person. And so also, I didn't know it as much at the time, but Mark is a man that cares about your development as a human being more so than just your development as an athlete. And I, as a cocky 16, 17 year old kid, I definitely needed that influence in my life. And so I'm very grateful for that.
Do you think, Mark obviously plays a huge role in it. But at the same time, when you've got guys like John Dreschel, who are just like a couple years younger than you, and are watching you guys have like this level of success, how much of it do you think plays into the high schoolers? Like, I guess, like, I want to be a part of that team. And it's just like the recency bias, I guess, plays into a factor of wanting to go to a place like Colorado. Or is it still tradition, I guess, that is more important into the minds of some of these high schoolers? What do you think their approach is now?
I'm not entirely sure. I always would say this to recruits on visits is that it takes a special kind of 16-year-old kid to 16-year-old boy or girl to come to see you, because you have to, you know, see past a lot of shiny, a lot of the shiny objects that a lot of schools have these days, and commit to being a runner. And so I think it's a self-selecting process. You come on a visit, and we would make it a point, we wouldn't go out to parties because we weren't partying in season, or and we were up at 8 a.m. running stupid fast at Magnolia Road on Sundays. And you know which kids are into that and which kids are not. And so I think it's more of a tradition standpoint. And the kids that do come, that end up coming to see you, I knew the tradition of CU before I went on the visit. And I knew, I had read Running with the Buffaloes, and that's what I was attracted to, and I think the kids that are there now are also the same way.
It's every team, I guess, when you ask them, it's like, you know, you have, I guess, a target on your back, and being, I guess, national champions, knowing that someone like NAU is also working just as hard, I guess, how much do you find yourself, let's say right now, it's August, we're about a month out before, you know, cross really gets going. At this point, 2 or 3 years ago, what was the state of the team in terms of setting goals for the season, knowing, I guess, like, we're probably the top dogs to beat?
We would hold each other accountable. And so most of the team, just by we would all be in Boulder at the same time around first week of July. And so we'd all been, at this point, you know, it being the first week of August, we've been training together for a month. Most of us are at, if not close to, full volume. We're up at at altitude. You know, we're doing our Sunday long runs at Magnolia and Gold Hill, and it would be a balance between going too hard too early and like running scared at all the teams behind us, and versus like being too complacent. And so the guys that we had on our squad, like Blake, who would always keep us honest, and Morgan Pearson, those guys were really, really leaders. And so they would set the tone for us, especially in those years that we won the championships.
All right, second place to NAU. How much did that sting?
Syracuse. To this day, I haven't looked at results in that meet. I don't know what place I finished. I don't know where I was the whole meet. It still stings. I wrote it in that piece. I still remember crying, sitting in the rain, looking at the board, and having my teammate Nick Harris like consoling me. I try not to think about it, but it is, they ran amazing that day, right? They ran out of their minds. On any other day, I think we would have won, but you know, there's nothing else that we could have done as a team. Like you can only control what you can control. And you know, Ben had mono that year and was coming back, and I torn my labrums, and there was nothing we could have done differently. That's the biggest takeaway. And so it was out of our control, and props to them for winning a title and running out of their minds on the right day.
And then going into, I guess, following that up with an indoor and outdoor season, mentally, how do you rebound from that?
I would make the argument I never did. I never did rebound from that, and I struggled throughout the rest of the year, just, you know, with races and staying competitive. But you look at guys like, I mean, Pierce obviously finished third that day and went on to have an incredible fifth year. And Pierce was a 9:14 guy in high school running around the island of Kauai. I don't even know if there was enough miles to do a full long run out there. And so he bounced back, obviously, and you know, the guys we did all right, but you know, it is, I went to CU to win national championships with the team. All the individual accolades were bonuses, but so it's like, it's hard to stay in it when you're not running with the team anymore.
Let's talk about doping for a little bit. You're very into it. Not into doping, but you're very into studying about doping and anti-doping like regulations and stuff. what got you into it?
I've always found myself really interested in it throughout high school, and really, I don't know, it's just always found myself interested in the general sports governance, IAAF and WADA and USADA. And then I really got into it my fifth year. I had an awesome class with a professor at CU who's a director of sports governance now, and Roger Pelkey. And he, you know, brought in, like, we had Lance Armstrong come to our class, and Travis Tiger, who's the CEO of USADA, and Oliver Luck, who's the number three man at the NCAA, and also Andrew Luck's father. And so I got into this whole idea of sports governance, but doping is the most interesting concept. I mean, all of global sport is pretty broken, and the NCAA is broken, but when you look at doping and how many people's lives have been ruined, because how many athletes have been, you know, forced to take 2 years off for minuscule drug offenses, and or how many athletes have missed out on medals and money. They're such easy fixes, they're easy to talk about and write about, but it's about changing the conversation, and hopefully that's what I'm just fascinated by all of it.
So you recently wrote something, I guess. We saw a tweet by Nick Simmons where he offered like 3 points as to how to clean up track and field. And you saw those 3 points and were like, well, it's not that simple. And you had a counter response to it. I guess just to sum it up for people who maybe haven't read the article, what were your three thoughts off of Simmons' tweet?
So Nick Simmons and a lot of athletes fall into this trap of calling for lifetime bans and or jail time for those who are convicted of doping, including my own coach, Mark Wetmore, and him and I had – Mark and Heather and I would have lots of very spirited discussions about it. But the biggest is with lifetime bans and jail time, it's operating on the premise that we're putting trust into USADA and WADA to be fair arbitrators in this whole process. And when you look at their records, it doesn't necessarily indicate that they should have bigger stick to police the world in doping. And then the second thing is, and social science proves this, and you look at this with the crime bill of 1994, with like harsher sentences, harsher punishments does not deter crime and or bad behavior. And so as long as there is money in sport, as long as there is money to be made for running faster, running world records, there will always be somebody who's going to be going to dope. We're not going to eradicate doping. We're looking at as a global sport, and so we have to do better than just shaming athletes for doping, shaming agents and coaches and sponsors, and then actually fixing the system so we can close loopholes and lower the percentage of athletes that actually dope.
Being on the Hill, how would someone go about trying to criminalize doping, and do you think it has any legs?
So actually a couple months ago, there was a hearing both in the House and in the Senate side on doping. The United States government gives about $9.5 million to USADA. That's where the majority of its funds come from. And there's also, and then WADA internationally gets a lot of its money from gets all half of its funding comes from global governments. And so it is in USADA's interest and WADA's interest to keep asking for more money. The problem is USADA and WADA are so concerned with just padding their numbers and like catching somebody for doping and just saying, look, we have 100 adverse results, and so we're catching doping. The way that I think somebody could legislate on the Hill would be, and this there would have to be political will for this, is encouraging transparency. I mean, there was a study in 2011 that I talked about in the article that said there's 29-34% of athletes actually admitted that they doped in the last year. And this is anonymously. So if you think about how many more athletes were probably worried about, admitting that they've doped. And so we need to be able to actually like point at numbers going down and look at making that 29% go down to 12% or 9%. It's never going to be zero, obviously. And so encouraging transparency so that these organizations can actually deserve more money. They do need more money. That's without a doubt, but they need to be better at what they're doing now, and they're not. So encouraging transparency at the federal level. And then with that, I think once you encourage transparency, then these groups will be forced to have some more checks and balances and to prove that they do deserve more money.
All right, we'll wrap up the doping talk and get into some more, because I'm sure you're going to be writing more pieces for our site on just different angles to the whole conversation, because it's probably never going to be a clean sport entirely. There will always be someone, sadly, that's the reality, so there will always be someone who cheats. So let's get into some fun questions.
Okay.
Who was the funniest guy on the CU teams?
If I don't say Blake, he would actually kill me. So I have to say Blake. Pierce was pretty funny in his own way. But Blake carried me through many a long run just with stories of his time and being one of the few white boys on a very sprint heavy high school team, and or his pursuit of women. So always a good time to hear from Blake.
Aside from the national titles, favorite race in a Colorado uniform?
Oh, easy. 2013 Pac-12 championships. We hosted Pac-12 in Boulder. there were 5,000 fans, easily 5,000 fans. It was such a loud race that you couldn't even hear yourself think. So it was great. I had Adam Goucher in that race yell at me to get my head out of my ass. So something special about that.
Scariest moment with Mark Wetmore, because I guess like to a lot of people he is intimidating, just like, and he for some I guess yeah does give off like a scary look, like this guy is a genius, but he's like I'm afraid to talk to him.
Oh yeah, no, even 5 years at CU, and there were plenty of times where I was terrified of him. None that I would probably talk about publicly here. Maybe any time that I failed the class and or fought with one of the academic coordinators, argued with the academic coordinators, I always had to explain myself to Mark, and the disappointment is not something you want to face from Mark.
Hardest workout on Magnolia Road. Anything come to mind?
Every workout on Magnolia Road is awful. Gold Hill as well, which is another run that we do at 9,000 feet. But the best one, and I mentioned it earlier, we had seven guys run sub sixes together at Magnolia Road, and that was really tough, but it was something special to do that with the squad we had that year.
This is going to be a tough one. You ready for it? Your Mount Rushmore of Colorado Buffalo runners. It could be male and female.
Oh God. Oh, now you're gonna throw it in there. Okay, mixed gender. I'm gonna do my top five.
There's four on Rushmore.
I know, honestly. I can't.
All right, we'll do four and then you get the extra one.
Okay.
Who like maybe made the cut. Oh, okay. Who would have made the cut any other day. It's a toss up.
Okay. So Mount first off, it would have to be Jenny Simpson is obviously on there. She's on there. Adam Goucher, for what he did for the culture of the team, you know, he set the standard of, or maybe it was just running with the Buffaloes that made it seem like that, but he set the standard of being tough and being no nonsense.
You've got two spots and one toss up left. This is going to be tough.
Oh, God. This is going to be. This might be controversial, but I have to mention him, is Billy Nelson.
Wow.
I'm going to say Billy Nelson for what he did as a coach, what he's done as a coach and as an athlete. Okay. Right. So he was a part of a national championship there. He redshirted the second year that they won. But he also, like his first year, if you look at his recruiting classes that he's brought in, you know, he's recruiting coordinator, and obviously there's Mark and Heather, but he's, you know, he's the guy that's putting in the work. He's brought in, you know, Danny Jones, who is winning national championships as a sophomore, as a true sophomore, and then he brought in the teams that were on the podium 5 years in a row, the women who were second last year. That is Billy's work, and I think he deserves to be on up there.
So to sum it up so far, your Mount Rushmore of Colorado Buffaloes, we have Jenny Simpson, Adam Goucher, Billy Nelson, one spot left, and then a toss-up.
Oh, my God. it's going to have to be – I got to do a woman, and it's going to be – this is tough. This is so tough. I don't want to say it, but I'm going to say it because they're going to have two on there. Kara Goucher. Emma's oh, this is so so I'm gonna say Kara, because Kara won. Kara won with the team, and right, she won in 2001 with the squad. I believe, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I think they did. They won when the men and women both won together, and so Kara won as a team. Emma would be on right there on the she's a toss up, because the Olympic medal, you know, all of that's super special. But when you think and maybe I'm wrong, but when I think Colorado, I think the team, the squad as a team, and I guess Jenny doesn't really fit that mold, but she's super special, like what she's done for the team culture in the same sense that Billy did. So
so Dathan, yeah. Ritzenhine misses the cut.
Yeah, well, Dathan didn't finish. He didn't finish at CU, so he left early. And that was kind of a, that's kind of a stipulation for me, at least.
All right, we've got the two questions that I ask every guest. First one, if you go on a run anywhere in the world with any person from history, you have a conversation on a long run, they can sustain the pace, who would it be and where would this run be?
Garouge, Hisham al-Garouge, for sure. Just so I could, you know, ask a lot of questions. And just so you know, he's a fellow Moroccan, so I gotta do that. Where would this be? Wow. There's so many places that I haven't had the chance to run. Probably like along the Boston Marathon course, you know, just to run along the Boston Marathon course, preferably on Boston Marathon Sunday or Monday, but yeah, I think just to be on that course would be special.
And last one has nothing to do with running, and you know what it is. So it's, you get 25 shots from half court. You make one, you win $25 million. You make none, you go to jail for 25 years. Do you attempt the shots?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I do it, yeah. I think I would make one, at least one. Yeah, I got it.
All right. Amar Moussa, thanks a lot for the time. This is fun. You're definitely going to stir up some controversy with that Mount Rushmore. So we're not going to hear the end of it. Your Twitter mentions are going to light up. But thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me, Chris. Appreciate it.
That does it for another episode of the City Smack Podcast. We'll be back with athlete interviews pretty soon. The next guest that we'll have on from Sidious will be Paul Snyder. So stay tuned for that episode pretty soon. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and leave a 5-star review. This has been your host, Chris Chavez, wishing you happy and healthy running.